Hey, next on the TE Nation, thanks for coming back and checking out part two of this week's show featuring Brian Jacobs, Chandler Withington, and Eddie Murray. Brian Jacobs is just one of the top instructors in our game annually. Golf Digest has named him one of the top instructors in the state of New York. He has recently moved down to Palm Beach Gardens to Belen Isle Country Club. Go online and check that place out. Unbelievable, the facility they have down there in Palm Beach Gardens. Brian can take anybody there to go check out his lessons and be a part of what he is doing. He is just one of the most positive, best instructors you're going to find anywhere in the country and just one of the nicest people on the planet. Brian has come to mean a lot to me. This is the 12th time he'll be a part of Next on the Tee. So he's coming up first. Following him is going to be Chandler Withington. Chandler, again, was one of the top PGA professionals in the country. He was at great places like Marion Golf Club and Hazeltine. He stepped aside from doing that to focus on his family and his artwork, and his artwork is off the charts. Great. Go online to archive22.com to see what he has been putting out there. He is also a fantastic speaker, so really looking forward to having Chandler back as part of the show. And then we're going to round out part two of this week's episode with Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray was a Pro Bowl kicker in the NFL for 20 years, played for the Lions, the Cowboys, and a host of other teams. Fantastic guy. We've had him on the football side on Thursday Night Tailgate for many years, joining me for the first time here on the golf side. And as you'll find out, Eddie's a fantastic player. He's out there playing out on the Celebrity Tour for many years, and he is hosting a wonderful event up there in Detroit still. He'll talk all about what he's got coming up here when we round out this week's show. Folks, again, as always, thank you so much for tuning in and making Next on the Tee a part of your weekly golf content. I appreciate you all so very much. Sit back, relax, and let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2under.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
Okay, now back and making it an even dozen times with me here on Next on the Tee is one of the great instructors and people on the planet for that matter, and that is Brian Jacobs. Let me remind you a little bit about Brian's background. He earned his undergraduate and his master's of education from State University, New York at Brockport. He became a PGA Assistant Director of Instruction at Ravenwood Golf Club up in Rochester, New York in 2006, simultaneously becoming a staff instructor for Hank Haney Golf. Back in 2010, he became the director of golf instruction and a Hank Haney certified instructor at Irondequoit Country Club in Rochester. In 2014, he became a lead instructor on the Golf Channel Academy, and in 2015, he started his own golf academy at Ridgemont Country Club. He has been named a top 100 instructor by Golf Range America and one of the top instructors in the state of New York by Golf Digest. He's a two-time recipient of the Western New York PGA Section Teacher of the Year Award, the Player Development Award, the Bill Strasbaugh Award, and the Horton Smith Award. He is now down at Belen Isle Country Club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. He is also one of the most positive and uplifting people you'll meet anywhere, and I'm so excited he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Brian, how are you, my friend?
Oh, Chris, I'm awesome. What an intro. Every time you meet you intro, I feel older and older. But I'll tell you, the awards and all the other stuff was really a byproduct of great people that have been around me, including yourself. And I'm just feel super grateful and super privileged to have you as a friend and be on the show.
And it was great getting to meet you finally in person earlier this year at the PGA Merchandise Show. It was even greater hanging out with you in person, and it has been hanging out with you here on the show. And you've been fantastic every time you've come on the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And you as well. It was good to put the name, the face and picture and everything else together. And that was a good time. It was, I had no agenda at all when I went there, just to kind of walk around and see colleagues and learn from them, and wound up interviewing for this position that I'm at right now, and never knew I was a finalist until then. And so, you know, God kind of took over then and put me down here, which is great. I love it.
So yeah, you got to talk about Ballin Isle, the country club. From what I saw online, just looks absolutely amazing. And I mean, this is a huge country club. It's got so many amenities. You got to talk about how you got this job and what it's been like for you so far.
Sure. Yeah, I have had my own brand for since about 2000, and you know, in Rochester, New York, which is an unbelievable golf community. But it was getting tougher and tougher to acquire customers, because all the clubs are building these elaborate, you know, they have dining rooms and movie theaters and, you know, teaching areas and all these other things. So I started to look around a little bit. And when you start making these lists, you start getting calls, and some pique your interest and some don't. And I've been interviewing with some larger places, and it just didn't work out, or it wasn't the right fit, or I take myself out of it. And so I had a friend that called me. I kind of was done. You know, I wasn't going to apply anymore. I said, well, I'll just go a couple more years. I'll get, you know, an even 30 in or whatever. And then I'll kind of call it a day with my brand. And so a friend of mine called me and he said, I think you should apply at Ballin Isle. And I said, no, that's, you know, that's too much for me. I said, a director of instruction. I go, I don't know. And he said, you better apply. He goes, because you're on their radar. Someone just called me and asked, you know, if you were available and if you were willing to interview. And so I applied and I didn't hear anything, you know, for a while. And here we are in 10 feet of snow in January in Rochester, and I'm in the Callaway booth, and two guys come up to me, and it's the director of golf, Jeff Fitzherbert, and then the head pro, Chris Hayes, came up and introduced themselves and apologized for not getting back to me for so long. And I was like, you're kidding me, right? I go, come on, you know, I got 10 feet of snow. Why didn't you call? And kind of jokingly, and they said, well, it's our season. You know, we started in October and we just can't even catch a breath. And so can you meet for dinner? And we'd like to interview you. And there's just something very special about both of them. And they felt the same way. And so things proceeded really, really well. And I did a site visit and I felt at home and talked to almost all the leadership there. And they had been, some of them 10, 12, 15 years, 8 years. And that says a lot about a culture that, you know, they love their jobs and they fed the employees every day, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
And just walking through the facility and seeing just the influence of Jack Nicklaus. And so Jack Nicklaus won the PGA Championship in 1971 on the East Course there. And then they used to play the World Cup there. So I'm walking on the grounds going, wow, Snead was here, and Hogan and Player and Trevino. And then you walk in the clubhouse and there's pictures of him and Jackie Gleason. And Perry Como used to play there just about every day. He was a member. And so it wasn't always Ballin Isles. It was J.D. MacArthur and owned the property. And so I learned the history. And I mean, the clubhouse just didn't end. And then I said, well, thanks for the tour. And like, where do I go? Like, where do I teach? And they said, oh, come on. And so they took me into the learning center and it's amazing. It's, you know, we have three golf courses, and two ranges, both with 65 spots and Top Tracer and TrackMan and another 11 acres of practice greens and a 23,000 square foot putting green. And you know, I'm almost crying, you know, when I'm in the interview looking at it going, you know, as an independent, you pay for all that stuff and you pay rent. And I go, this, I can use all this. They're like, yeah, and you get a cart and everything. And I'm like, I get a cart. Yeah. And you get staff. And I'm like, I get staff, you know? And so we're really working hard on building a great culture. And And the members there are just phenomenal, just absolutely just wonderful. They're happy people. They're vivacious. They love golf. And that's really cool. Like, it's just a cool, cool place. And you know, I just kind of dug right in, and I'm trying to meet everybody and change the world in 8 weeks, but it's gonna take a little longer. So, but it's just absolutely been just amazing. Like, the golf shop is literally like a department store. I mean, it's incredible, just the size of it and the volume and how supportive the people are. And I think they have, I don't want to misquote, but I know they have 5 restaurants.
Oh my.
And they all have a different vibe. So they're everywhere from cheeseburgers and pizza all the way up to, you know, the finest food that you can get. Trying to think what else. It's just, and the 3 golf courses are amazing. So they have an east, a north, and a south. And so Nicholas redid the east course. And they opened that in 2020, reopened in 2020. And it's just been wonderful just playing all the golf courses and just seeing the contour of everything and just the agronomy. They have an agronomy director, and then they have 3 heads groundskeepers as well, and then all their staffs, because all the golf courses are independent. I think they have 400 employees, and it's a Troon portfolio property, so it's one of their top properties. So it's like, I'm still, like I said in our pre-interview, I just pinch myself every day. Like, you got to be kidding me with this place every time I drive in. And just, you know, kind of take it all in. Just the flowers, even, or, you know, you look at them and you're like, I wonder how much it is to keep these flowers alive, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And so, and they're just great people, just very, very, very cool people. I've met so many, so many nice people and heard so many stories about how they were entrepreneurs or ran a business, or some are athletes that have played professional sports, and they're just at home, you know, just relaxing and playing golf.
Yeah, it sounds like you're at a 5-star resort.
I am every day. I mean, it's just crazy, like just how they treat you, how kind they are, and that's how they want it. They want it to be a very open and inviting place, and they. The general manager there, Ryan Walls, is absolutely incredible. He's a big culture guy. And he, you know, he lives it and he walks it, and talks it, which is really, really amazing. When you see how much work he has to do. And I didn't even mention the tennis area. So the tennis, they have a sports complex that has fitness and wellness. And I think they have 22 or 24 tennis courts. So the Williams sisters used to live in there. So they have an exhibition court for pros and pickle courts and tournaments. And I mean, it is just absolutely amazing.
It sounds like it. For everyone who's listening who now says, geez, I want to be a member at Ballin Isle, tell them where Ballin Isle is.
It's Ballin Isles is in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. So it's right off PGA Boulevard. And it's gated, like everything, which is a total culture thing to me, like total culture shock. Like everywhere you go, there's gates and you have to call people and get gate clearance and have codes. And so even looking for housing was a lot of fun. You can't just, like, where I grow up, if you want to look at a house, you just drive down the street. You know, here you got to call and get security clearance and meet a manager and walk around. And so it's a little bit of a different culture change, but really close to the beach. Delray is about a half an hour away, and PBI, where you fly into, is about 15 minutes. So it's just an awesome place to live.
Coming down there from Rochester, part of your student base were a handful of Buffalo Bills players. Are you going to be able to keep those Bills players as students? Are they going to be able to come down to Ballin Isle, or are you going to be able to do video? Or
They can come in, and Eric Wood visited. Let's see. He visited early in my stay here. I feel like I've been here a year, but it's only been 8 weeks. So he was about 3 weeks in, or maybe 2 weeks in, he actually spoke at a event here at the club. It's called the Fitzy, and it's kind of like the Invitational. And so he spoke, and then we had a nice dinner after that. So they gave us a 24-ounce steak, and and I said, for two of us, right? And he's like, no, each of you get a 24-ounce steak. And I said, well, that's about 18 too much for me, And but we were waited on, and we sat in a private room and got a chance to catch up. And I've had a couple of my out-of-towners in. One of my guys is a trick pilot, and so he flew a show in Tampa and then got in his other plane and flew down, and I picked him up at the in Stewart at the aviation center there. And I had a doc come in from Scotty Atlas for a few days. And then I think in 2 weeks, I've got another student coming in, Cirrus owner. And yeah, but my guys, if they want to come down, they know they can come. And so camp will be, OTAs will be happening pretty soon. So that's the time where I used to see them the most. So they're holding on to their free time right now.
Ryan, let's switch gears a little bit, but sure. Speaking of the Buffalo Bills, I got to get your thoughts on the draft. We're here a couple of days post this year's draft. And what did you think about what your boys did?
I thought they did great. I thought it was great. They did some stuff in free agency, and it's hard, as the franchises, if you really look at it, I think the turnover on rosters is about 70-80% every year, and 100% of the fans flip out every year, which is, I try to lay in the weeds a little bit, because guys are going to go to free agency, and you're happy for them, right? When they get to another ball club and they get a good contract. And so I just thought they did great. I thought it was great getting down into the second round and having all the picks that they had. And Brandon Bean, to me, is just an absolute wizard. As a general manager, he's good at wheeling and dealing, and he seems to be able to compile pretty good ball clubs every year. So I thought the kid from Florida State that they drafted is a freak, absolutely amazing. And the kid they got from Duke is awesome too. He's a high culture, high motor, guy. So should be wonderful. I haven't followed it completely with their free agency. It's really funny. Since I've been here, I've watched probably 2 minutes of television and haven't been on social media much, and just kind of work and go to the gym and get this ship going the right direction, for the instruction. But how did your Steelers do? How did you feel?
I felt outstanding. I mean, I think Omar Khan is the best GM we've had since Tom Donahoe back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I thought the guys that they brought in, I mean, look, we know that the offensive line has not been as good as it needs to be. And we got three guys to come in that are offensive linemen. I think, that's going to help Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, whoever ends up being the starting quarterback. Now with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator, and they're going to want to run first offense. Right. And to be able to block well for Najee Harris is going to be a huge deal. So I'm very excited.
I agree. I was not surprised at some of the moves they made. And I think Justin Fields will probably be your guy, which is great. Great kid. And I'm sure he's got a little fire, in his belly going to get going and prove, that he can really play. And it'll be great. The AFC is awesome. I'm so happy the NFL is coming along, because I just love football. I love every part of it. And it's been fun to watch college. It's fun to watch, the pros, and I try never to miss a game. And so I know you don't miss any.
No, for sure not. But here's the one thing I don't understand. And I was talking to another buddy of mine who's a huge Bills fan. In 2017, you guys traded down with the Chiefs, which allowed them to pick Pat Mahomes. Right. Now the Bills, who need wide receiver help, trade down again with the Chiefs, which lets them get Xavier Worthy, who is like Tyreek Hill 2.0. He ran the fastest 40-yard dash in the NFL combine. And the Chiefs are the team that you guys need to overcome to get back to a Super Bowl. I just can't understand why you keep trading with them and let them get all this great talent.
Right. I don't know. That's the one thing I don't get, but I don't know, 4-3, but can he catch, you know, and can he stay out of jail and some of the other things, you know, but
yeah,
I kind of look at that and say the corners are fast too. And, I don't know. It'll be interesting for sure. You know, Buffalo seems to go for kind of bigger and, you know, longer and freakier, and which is good, I guess. And they do get some smaller guys too, like Deion Hardy they had and Isaiah McKenzie, but they were more window dressing, I think, in a lot of ways, even though they were great ball players. I don't know. That's a really great question. I guess we'll have to see. I think they're very confident in their defense, even though the safeties are changing and, you know, the corners probably are. I'd like to see Kair Elam, you know, get a chance to really play. And he's awesome. He's just a great kid. And we'll see what happens, right? Who knows?
Right.
Those little guys, they don't last long either. They get whacked around a little bit.
Yeah.
They get injured a lot. So who knows? You never know if they'll make a whole season.
Right. You send out some great things to the folks on your email list throughout the month. You sent a message recently about leadership a couple of weeks ago and the characteristics that great leaders possess. Do you mind talking about the 5 characteristics that you think great leaders all possess?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly looking at things, you know, to make myself accountable, I guess, to me, more than anything. But I think that, you know, when you're starting to look at leadership, especially in the coaching realm, probably the most important thing is humility. We have to look at kind of being able to take in the outside oxygen. It's, you know, even coming here, when you hear from people that everything's perfect, you're kind of like, perfect? You know, like, is there anything, you know, that we can do better, you know, than what's being done? And so every day I'm kind of talking to myself, you know, about the types of skills that I want to have. And I think humility is a skill. And I think, you know, we've got to have skills as a leader. We've got to have soft skills, but emotional skills. Sometimes leaders come in and they ram their agendas, you know, down people's faces. And I don't know if you know who PJ Fleck is, but he has this philosophy of, he's very well-known coach now that is kind of known for turning programs around, but it's called Row the Boat. And like when you row a boat, your back faces the bow and you face the stern. So you can only see the path. You can't really see what's ahead of you, but you have to keep rowing and you have to row in unison. You know, and everybody talks about communication with people. And it's very interesting, even with my own team, how different people process information and how they communicate. And so I'm constantly urging people to be kind, to be gentle, to be compassionate, to be loving, caring, to serve your teammates. You know, the team is always number one to me. And then also, you know, I want people to be able to build relationships and just, you know, constantly, continually grow. So I'm always reading. There's always a better way to do things. John C. Maxwell said it, you know, leaders are readers. And I was not a reader as a kid either. And so it's kind of fun to, my dad says, boy, you read a lot of books. And I said, right, but I don't read the Westerns, you know, and the romance novels and the mysteries. I go, I'm reading about leaders, you know, Teddy Roosevelt or maybe Eisenhower or Simon Sinek or John C. Maxwell or John Gordon, David Nurse, you know, just to mention a few. And then also read about coaches, you know, Dean Smith or Jim Valvano or, you know, Mike Krzyzewski. Even though they were in a different sport than golf, you can still learn the elite traits, you know, of great leadership. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. And so now I'm in the opportunity, I have the opportunity to kind of put it into practice where I'm at. And it's been just awesome, you know, watching people push against it and people that are moving to it. It's been just a very interesting process. And so you just kind of keep chipping away, right? My grandfather used to talk about chopping the wood. And I know that Greg Schiano, coach at Rutgers, that was his big thing. He called it the chop. And so if you can take an axe and hit the same spot every time, eventually the log's going to break. And so sometimes you just have to keep, I guess, hitting someone with an axe. But the axe is kindness. Yeah, it's kindness. It's humility. It's patience. It's, you know, a consistent message every time. And if you can get the team, you know, to move in the right direction, I mean, you're going to win. You're going to win big, and which is great. You're going to have daily wins. And the wins, again, are more in the service realm. You know, we set a really nice vision here at 71 Learning Center, which is a 4-bay TrackMan facility with club fitting and just everything and anything you could imagine at the facility. And so we've got young men and women that are responsible for these tools, and they need to know how to use them. And then they also need to know how to interact, you know, with people. And it's just at the end of the day, people really want to be served. They want to be cared for. They want to be loved. And it's on the team side and also on the, you know, the customer side. And so it was really funny. I was in a meeting, one of the early meetings, and one of the staff said, "Why do you keep calling everybody a customer? They're members." And I'm like, "They're a customer. they're partaking in a service, so we need to serve. We're in human service to you guys. We're maybe not as important as nurses and doctors and firemen, but we're servers. That's why we're here. We're teachers." And he kind of looked at me like, "Oh, I never thought of it that way. I just thought of them as members, you know." And I'm like, "No, they're people, you know, they're not." And so we've had some really good conversation in the last few weeks, and he's a little bit older, you know, and he's kind of like, "Wow, I just can't get over like how you called them customers." And I said, "Well, they buy stuff, and you know, they're taking lessons, and so, or you know, getting coaching, so they're a consumer."
That's right.
A customer. Yeah. So it's, we're all customers, we're all consumers.
Right.
And if we can look at each other in a kind way and be gentle with each other, which we need a lot of in our society, and patience, you know, we can really accomplish some pretty great things when you really get down to it.
Right. Brian, just a couple more before I let you go. I got to get a playing lesson from you.
Yeah, so, that'd be fun. Come on down.
Indeed. Definitely now.
Yeah.
I got to get one from you tonight, though. I want to, for many of us, and I'm one of them, I got my hand in the air. We struggle in our swings with early extension, kind of coming over the top, hitting that pull hook. What is something that we can do, something we can adjust that'll help us hit straighter shots?
Well, this is the cool thing about early extension, the early part. So basically what happens with early extension is that the vertical force that you're using is out of sequence. So whenever somebody wants to hit a golf ball, they'll create verticality before they convert, have lateral movement. And so many people have heard like lateral movement is bad for your golf swing. But if you take a look at how somebody throws a baseball or a football, they have to move laterally. They move lateral first, then they rotate, and then they move vertical from that point. So if we can just get the movement to be lateral first. So one way that we do that, or I do it, is I do it in the gym a lot, mostly with people, like throwing a med ball. But we can do it sometimes too with having people do proprioception exercises with just hitting balls with their feet together, balancing on one foot and hitting a ball, balancing on the other foot and hitting a ball, hitting balls with your eyes closed with a normal stance, sumo squat, hitting a ball. All these different things make your body function, and it makes you move the club in space, and you'll start to get that lateral motion just intrinsically. You won't early extend. It's I'd be hard pressed to find anybody that really extends when they're squatted down in a sumo position with the club, you know, flat underneath their zipper line. They won't really extend. They don't stand up at all. They move lateral and they rotate. So that would look weird on the golf course, but those are the feelings we need to get. And if we can get someone a feeling, then they can actually turn it into reality from that point. So I would say play some games first. And then when you go out on the golf course, just play. You know, and I've had people that have had early extension, and I'm like, it's great. At least you're early. At least you get vertical at some point. And then we just kind of pull on their lead pocket and keep moving them around, and they start to respond. Have them throw a ball, you know, or take the club and pretend they're throwing it. They have to move lateral to do it the right way. They won't really extend at all. It's like a pandemic. It's a golf term that, you know, it's like people are just so scared of it. Everybody thinks they early extend too. And so you're like, yeah, you extend. Everybody extends. That's called vertical force. They're like, oh, I never knew that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Brian, when we were talking just before coming on air, as you know, the show is on the Pittsburgh Tribune review site there on the sports page. Cool. And one of the sponsors now is Iron City Beer and the Pittsburgh Brewing Company. You were telling me an Iron City beer was the first one you ever had.
First taste of beer I ever had. Yep. My dad didn't know. He went to the men's room and we were at a game at Three Rivers. When my dad and I and a young man that I played baseball with, we used to go every year, just about every year. And he went to the bathroom and he left his beer there. And I told my friend, I go, I'm gonna have a sip. He's like, no, we're underage. And I think I was maybe 15, and drinking age at the time was 18. And I took a sip of it and I was like, huh, so this is what all the fuss is about, huh? So I can remember too, going when I was 18, my dad said, okay, here we go. We got two things to do today. It's your birthday. And I go, what, dad? He goes, well, you're going to have your first beer and you're going to go sign up for the draft. And I said, wow. Well, yeah, I said, it won't be my first beer, but we can do the draft, you know? So that Iron City was my first one. So it's pretty cool. I remember it being in a white can. I think it had a steel mill on the front of a black, you know, with a black emblem and a gray steel factory on it. Crazy what you remember.
Indeed. Yeah. Brian, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether it's following you on your website or it's on social media?
Yeah, they can just go to Brian Jacobs Golf or at Brian Jacobs Golf on Instagram, and then Twitter. Same thing at Brian Jacobs Golf. I'm not posting a lot right now, but I have kind of got back into it a little bit. And then if they want to look me up at Ballenisles, BallenIsles.org, you can find me on their webpage. And we can teach outsiders. And part of the deal is if we teach them and we want to take them on the course, we can do that too on any one of the courses. So, you got to get down here.
Indeed. Yeah, the place is absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, it's even better in person.
No doubt. Brian, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show for a 12th time. You're a dear friend, and I can't tell you how much you mean to me and you have meant to this show over the years. On top of being a great instructor, you're a 10 times better person. So thank you so much for joining me again tonight.
Oh, I appreciate it, Chris. I feel the same way about you. And we need more great people like you in the world to make it a better place.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I think that of you as well. All the best to you and your family, my friend. I hope we get the opportunity to catch up again a little bit later on this summer.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Brian. Mm-hmm. That is the great Brian Jacobs. Folks, and again, Brian Jacobs Golf is where you can find him on social media and online. And I promise you, there is nobody more positive and upbeat that you'll run into in your daily life than Brian Jacobs. That's completely away from the golf course and his teaching. He is just that great of a guy. and he's going to make you feel better about yourself, as you can kind of hear right there at the end. He makes you feel better about yourself than you probably did going into things. And then when you marry that up with being a great instructor for the technical part of the golf swing, for physiology, for everything that goes into it, your diet, all of that sort of thing is what you're going to get when you are working with Brian Jacobs. So he's going to make your life better, and your golf swing is just going to happen to go along for the ride. So I can't thank him enough. He's been a wonderful friend for many years. It was a huge thrill to meet him in person down at the PGA Merchandise Show. I'll get him back on here again probably a little bit later on this summer. Okay, coming up next is going to be Chandler Withington. As I said in the intro to this part of the show, Chandler has been a wonderful PGA professional. He has been at historic courses like Marion Golf Club and Hazeltine. He's also a wonderful artist. Again, Archive 22 is his website. Please go check that out. And he's a fantastic speaker on top of all of that. You'll hear that in this coming segment. Before I get to Chandler, though, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com.
Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join me, LPGA Pro and golf mindset expert Debbie O'Connell, for my Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cuts 6 strokes and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
Okay, now next on the tee with me is Chandler Withington. Let me remind you about Chandler's background. He earned his BA degree in golf management from Campbell University. He spent a couple of years as an assistant pro at Seminole Golf Club, then moved on to become the assistant pro at Canoe Brook Country Club in New Jersey. He later moved up to be the number one assistant at Marion Golf Club and then head golf pro at Hazeltine. For the last few years, he has stepped away to focus on his artwork, which is fantastic. He has created great pieces for the USGA and the PGA of America, and ultimately for all of us, to commemorate the history of the US Open, PGA Championship, and the Ryder Cup. You can go online to check out his artwork at archive22.com, and I couldn't be more excited. He is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Chandler, thanks for coming back on the show.
Chris, good to be with you, and good to start with a laugh. I can laugh at myself.
So, Chandler, it's been almost a year since I got to spend some time with you on the show. Update us. What's been going on with you?
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for checking back in with me and giving me a chance to come back and talk with you, which is always great. And I enjoyed listening to Brian Jacobs before we came on. I think listening to your introduction, which is thank you. I mean, thank you for the long list of where I've been. I think we just start with gratitude for the opportunities that we've been given. But I think when I stepped away from the job at Hazeltine, I think a lot of people say what you did, which is, to focus on the artwork. The artwork has happened. I think I really just stepped away first and foremost. You know, my focus was on being a more present father to our 3 kids, was really the driving force behind that decision. And then really without a plan, and I don't recommend that to anyone, please don't quit your job if you don't have another plan. It's rather stressful in a household. But we've found a way to make it work. Yeah, the artwork has been at the forefront of our business, Archive 22, and it's really kind of been this great accident, something that I started doing when I was at Hazeltine to get me kind of through the winters, and it kind of came on the heels of a health scare for my wife. But I started drawing these for me. I wanted to have things on my walls that would get me talking with other people when they came in my office, and it just got the conversation started. Where's Chris Mascaro from? And where have you been? And what do you love? And who are your favorite players? What are some of your favorite moments in golf that you've been to, or favorite places? And where are you going? And just getting things started from there. And I think as those conversations went along, we always kind of crossed our wires into, I bet you've met this person. And if you've been there, do you know this person? And we find out we're a lot more connected than we really believed, at first touch. So the artwork's been great. And, you know, I'm kind of pressing play right now on another phase. And maybe I told you when we visited last, but it's, I try to remind people, I'm really kind of a storyteller first and foremost, and an artist second, maybe even third. I want to tell the stories behind the artwork, you know, from Championship Golf and the world of golf. I'm more of a value-based storyteller. So I've started doing some public speaking. I have a message which I can share a little bit, and then like you, I'm going to start a podcast, and I'm sure people will roll their eyes and be like, you know, great, the world needs another podcast, right? Why would you want to get into the ocean that is podcast? But Chris, I think what I kind of ran into over the last few years since leaving was just within the golf industry and the golf professionals, PGA professionals. We're all just trying to figure out how to move forward, not just in our careers, but in life. I think everyone's kind of struggling with different issues. So I want to kind of create a community amongst the golf professionals that we can share our journeys, successes, failures, hardships, lessons learned, and kind of be vulnerable. And you know, all of it to kind of create a community of encouraging each other, so that we can all just try to find some wins in our lives and find our perspective. But my speaking message, you know, really has to do with what drove my resignation, which was, when I look back at 2021, Chris, I was watching the movie Back to the Future with my oldest daughter. Anybody who watched that movie as many times as I have, you know, Marty McFly ends up back in 1955, and he's interrupted his life, and he's trying to put the pieces back together. And it really all hinges on his dad, George McFly, asking out his mom, Lorraine. He's really, you know, trying to put the pieces back together so that he could be in the picture. And it just kind of dawned on me that night that I was watching that movie. I started checking my wife's Instagram, and I wasn't in the picture of our family. It was my wife at a lot of events with our three daughters, and I wasn't there. I was at work. And I started realizing, like, I'm not the pictures that I want to be in. I've loved my career. I had a great and blessed career. Everywhere I've gone, I've loved the people, the teams, the places. I wouldn't change any of it. But it just started to dawn on me that if I didn't make a real change in my life, I was going to miss everything that I wanted to be a part of. So my message is, you know, it's really targeted towards men who struggle with this. You know, we're told that life is about the success that you achieve at work and the accolades and the accomplishments. But Chris, I've met so many people who've gotten to the end and told me that they have a lot of regret about how hard they worked or how much they worked and what they missed. And again, come back to what I said earlier, like, I'm not trying to tell people to go out and quit their jobs. Like, please don't do that. But I do want people to take some inventory of, you know, what are the pictures in your life? And are you in that picture that you see of your life? And if you're not, then how can we take inventory and reprioritize and make some hard decisions to put things back to where they should be, kind of like Marty McFly?
Yeah, I think that's the hard part. And I think everybody listening, including myself, we would love that opportunity, but you're right. Trying to figure out how to accomplish that and how to have a plan so that we aren't spending 50 or 60 hours a week working and 2 or 3 hours a night, potentially at home, you know, getting to spend time with our families. But, you know, when your kids start to get a little bit older, they're doing their thing and they're not home all that often. So it really, you don't want to get to be 65, 67, whatever your retirement age based on your age group or your social standing is, and look back and see not much outside of all the work that you did to try to keep the lights on. I think that's we'd all sign up for being able to spend, I think, more time with our families. It's just hard to try to figure out how can I make that happen and be home more. It's a tough thing.
I think the industry term that's not just used in the golf industry, and it's not just golf that's going through this. I mean, the whole world, I think, after COVID, you know, started to relook at how do we use our time? But people refer to work-life balance, and all of a sudden, it seems like I've become like this spokesperson for work-life balance. My response to that is, has anyone met anyone who has said, you know what, Chris, I've achieved perfect work-life balance. I've done it. I don't think there is such a thing, and nor should it be balanced. You know, life is always going to be full of imbalance. You're going to have different things in different stages of life. You know, if your family is just having a newborn kid, I mean, it's going to reprioritize things for you. There's things that will go to the back. You know, if you're going through a crisis in your family, et cetera, like all these different things can happen and you'll just have to keep different plates spinning, but you know, certain plates will get more attention than others at that time. But what I've tried to tell people is work-life balance to me is your ability to manage the expectations placed upon you. And that can come from your career and your work, from your family, other people that want to spend time with you. What are the expectations that they have? And how do you manage the commitments that you've made? And I go back to when I was younger and single and I wasn't with anyone. I didn't have a family. Like I was an assistant pro at Marion. Like all I wanted to do was be at Marion for 80, 90 hours a week. Like I didn't want to be anywhere else. You know, and life changes and, you know, other people come along and that's the great part of the journey is to not go through life alone when other people join you. But it pulls you in other directions. And I think it's just everyone's ability to look at like, what are the expectations and what are the commitments that I made and how do I honor all of them? And how can I balance this in such a way that doesn't get so imbalanced, if that helps?
It does. I tell you what, the thing that I'm interested to learn from your perspective, being a PGA professional, and you talk about work-life balance, that is one of the hardest positions to find a work-life balance because as I talk to your peers, most of them are at the club 70, 75 hours, 80 hours a week. Because you've got a membership team that you've got to take care of. You've got your own, you know, direct reports and the people that are on your staff to take care of. You've got a general manager to report to. You've got a clubhouse to run. You've got, you know, lessons and all that sort of stuff. I would think that to find work-life balance as a PGA professional is one of the most challenging places to try to find it.
And I think the reason that is, Chris, is, I mean, the fellow PGA golf professionals, PGA members, apprentices, the people that I know, they're driven by serving other people. I mean, it's a sacrificial mindset and we want to come through for people. So we don't want to let all those people down and all those waking hours of the day, we try to come through and, you know, for decades we have, and we've kind of created this expectation that we're going to be there all the time. Any type of change that happens in any walk of life, there has to be somebody who's willing to break the chain. And I think what we had was, in my experience at least, was the work ethic that I saw the PGA pros that I worked under. I saw like the amount of time they were there. That was the expectation that got handed down to me. And I handed it down to my assistants. There was kind of one of these aha moments, I would say, in my last year where my lead assistant came in my office and he was making the schedule for July. And one of the younger assistants said, hey, you know, I'd love to have this weekend off to go to a wedding. And, you know, the lead assistant's kind of looking at me like, that's a no, right? I mean, it's always been a no. We don't take weekends off in July. Like, why even ask? And I was already starting to change. And I looked at him and I said, look, I get it. You know, I never had weekends off in July, neither did you. But let's look at this. You know, we don't have an event that weekend. We have plenty of coverage. Why can't he? And also just trying to understand that, like, when we say no to those requests, we're not just saying no to the person asking, we're saying no to also the people that he wants to spend time with. So I said, look, give him that weekend. And by the way, you take this weekend and this person takes this weekend and the other person takes this weekend. And you all have a weekend off between now and mid-August. It takes someone willing to just break the chain of, well, that's the way it's always been. I think there's only one statement in life, Chris, that when I ask somebody, like, why do we do something? If they say, well, that's the way it's always been, like, I really lose my patience with that response.
Same.
So it takes, you know, there are people that are in fixed mindset. Fixed mindset is, well, that's the way it's always been. That's the way it will always be. Growth mindset is kind of like, well, that's the way it's been, but is that the right way to do it? And if we kind of bring some growth mindset people into these conversations, I think we're already seeing some change. I mean, the conversation's gotten louder post-COVID because we just couldn't sustain that pace. And I think if anything, PGA golf professionals are advocating more for themselves and their families and their time and, you know, realizing like, I don't need to be here as much as I was. And they need to hear like, it's okay to be with your family. We support that. We want you to have a healthy family life. And I think what facilities ultimately will understand is the better the home life and the happier the family, the better the work product, even though they may only be there 50 hours a week, you'll get 50 really good hours. And look, we know all the studies tell us, look, after 55, it's all mush anyway, right? So after that, it's just standing by a podium, right? So I just want people to be really productive in their work hard when they're there, but leave work at work and go home and focus on the other things that are important in life before it's gone.
Wow. I think that's great advice. Thank you for sharing it. And thank you for being a guy out there willing to break that chain. Someone had to do it, and I'm glad you were a part of that. Let me ask you a couple of questions, because as I was looking out on your social media, you shared a great story on your Instagram page about Arnold Palmer and the Ryder Cup that happened back when we first lost him in September of 2016. Do you mind sharing that story?
Happy to. It's actually the one memory, as many memories as I have from the 2016 Ryder Cup at Hazeltine. People ask me, you know, what is one that really sticks out? And I think as the years go by, people kind of forget that happened that week. Chris, it was Sunday night before the week started. I was kind of riding around the golf course with my family, and I had to get back to the clubhouse. There was this kind of kickoff event with all the committee chairs and our ballroom with the leaders of the PGA. And my wife drove me up to the clubhouse and actually got out of the car. And Davis Love, our captain, was sitting on the wall calling the players that didn't make the team, and kind of sat with him for a while he finished his calls. And then we went in the clubhouse. You know, he was going to go in this one room with a Ryder Cup backdrop and announce that he was going to pick Ryan Moore as his final pick. And I went into the ballroom to join everyone. I kind of, just as soon as I got into the ballroom, was standing in the back, and this one member, as soon as I walked in, just takes his phone and puts it right in front of my face. And it was this tweet that said, golfing legend Arnold Palmer has just passed away at the age of 87. And it's just one of those moments where you're like, that's going on right now. And I see Julius Mason from Communications, the PGA, kind of get up from the front. He's already tapping away on his phone and kind of signals me out of the hallway. He's like, you see it? Yeah. He said, look, Rich Lerner and the Live From guys are racing in. Can you put that flag outside at half mast for Arnold? And I'd gone through some things with flag code with the Walker Cup at Marion that I understand that you can't just lower the flag because you're sad that your friend died. I knew there's a code to it. I give Governor Dayton a lot of credit. He kind of came up with an ordinance that allowed us to lower it the whole week for Arnold. Arnold had served our country. That helped a little bit. And that happened about 10 o'clock, but I went out to the Live From set, and a couple things. One, Rich Lerner should win an award for the show that he put on that night. You have to remember that Arnold Palmer started the Golf Channel. He's the reason they started. This was basically their 9/11, you know, their founder passed away, and Rich had this big purple binder with a label on the spine that said Pennzoil. And he was well prepared for that show, as Rich always is. But for the next 5 hours, I sat on the other side of the camera and listened to Rich cover the life of one of the most impactful people in our game. And I think just to follow up on what we're just talking about, as far as what's most important in life, I think what I took away from that night was all these people that called from around the globe, all these tour players, people in golf, they all called to honor the life of Arnold. Sorry. But, you know, Rich covered the resume and the accomplishments, but the people, when they called, they never talked about, you know, the shot that Arnold hit at Cherry Hills and in the 60 Open, you know, or any of that stuff. You know, they all talked about who he was as a person and how he made other people feel. And it's a great reminder that, you know, when we leave this earth, it's not really about what we did. It's about how we made people feel. And it was really such a great way to start that week with just that perspective of, look, this event's important, but, you know, both teams want to win. But, you know, 40 years from now, this ain't going to matter. You know, it's about, you know, how you conduct yourself out there. And I think we saw those great moments that week, you know, moments like Patrick Reed and Rory high-fiving each other after, you know, those shots. And that's what the Ryder Cup was supposed to be about, you know, when it had its genesis back in 1920s, before it was even official, it was meant to be a camaraderie match. And I hope we always keep that aspect, because I think that just, you know, personified who Arnold was.
Chandler, just one more before I let you go. And you did a hand-drawn Masters piece that you gave away right after the tournament this year. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful, just like all the other things that you do. Is that something that you might be adding to your shop and things that you might be doing in the future?
Well, I hope so. And I appreciate the kind words of you saying that. It's funny, that one, I drew that during COVID when Dustin Johnson was winning in 2020. And that was back in such an era of, like, I was drawing it for an audience of one. I was drawing it for me. I think it's okay. I'm probably more critical than most people. I think it's just okay. Where we are with the artwork is, I think people are kind of like, well, when are you going to put out the Open Championship? When are you going to put out the Masters? Like, it's not really up to me. If you do it the right way, at least, of course, I could start selling these tomorrow, but I probably get a cease and desist pretty soon after. And look, we play a game by the honor of, you know, integrity of, you know, calling the rules on ourselves when no one's looking. For some perspective, you know, it took us 8 months to get permission from all 52 clubs on the US Open to use their logo on the artwork. Never been done before. It took us another 10 on the PGA Championship and Ryder Cup. And we're in month 15 on the Open Championship. You know, the RNA and St. Andrews are in. There's one club outstanding. Patience wins in these things. And I think we kind of told ourselves, if we can get US Open, Ryder Cup, PGA, and the Open in the market, I'll call Augusta and see if they're interested. But we wanted to have that credibility before you approach an association like that. We wanted to have a track record, demand people like yourself asking for it. If and when we get there and they're interested in it, you know, I will insist that it all gets redrawn. I like to think that I've gotten better at this over the last 4 years. But all things in time, Chris, you know, I'd love for it to happen. But I just want to be really patient with the process and continue to earn the right to be considered, because there's so many great artists out there right now. I'm still such a beginner at this and just humbled by the success that we've already had.
Chandler, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they go online, check out all the wonderful things you have available there, and then continue to follow you on social media?
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. I mean, our listeners and our followers, people listening right now, is what's making all this possible. You know, without people who want to buy your artwork, I'm just a guy doodling in my basement. That's a pretty scary reality. So the people that support me and my family in this journey that we're on and the reasons that we did it, you can find us at archive22. That's archive22.com. Use the welcome code for 15% off. You can use the bulk discount code on our shop page for 20% or more off and free shipping. But find me on Instagram at Chandler Withington. And I love to interact with people. I have such a curiosity about other people. You know, I look at every follower. Who are they? You know, where are you? I'm so curious about them. And I hope through this journey here of public speaking and getting the podcast going, that I'll get to learn more about them through engaging and interacting and sharing knowledge. We're all in this together. You know, none of us has got this life figured out. If we can learn from each other, you know, we got a chance, right?
Indeed. Chandler, you're such a wonderful guy. I can't thank you enough for coming back and sharing more of your stories and your insights with us. You're doing great things out there, and the message that you convey is just top-notch, just like you are. I can't thank you enough for your time. Hopefully, we get the privilege of catching up again much sooner this next time around.
Yeah, I'll work on the mute button next time. But Chris, thank you for all you do for golf. We all love it in the same way. And thanks for all you do. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chandler. All the best to you and your family, my friend.
Likewise. Thank you.
See you, Chandler. That is Chandler Withington. Withington is the spelling of his last name. Archive22.com is the site, folks. You go on there and look at what he has done for the posters or prints that he has put together for the USGA and the PGA of America, and see how he's got them. All the logos, all the years that whatever site it was held at, who won that year. It's just fantastic stuff. I was reading one of the articles, and some feedback that he got was from the U.S. Open was that was the most wonderful piece of memorabilia that the person that was he was talking to said he saw in the merchandise tent. And I 100% agree with that. And he's going to sign it for you, too, if you want him to. It's just a fantastic stuff. And then when you see what he did, and you guys know how much I love Augusta National and the Masters, the piece that he gave away is fantastic. He's way too modest about what that piece looked like. It was fabulous. So you got to go out there and check it out, and then give him a follow on social media as well as he continues to do things. His podcast, I'm sure, is going to be out. And you can hear in his voice what a great speaker he is. And then the message that he wants to send, great stuff. I'll get him back on the show again much sooner this next time around. All right, now joining me for the first time on this show, but a guy who has been a wonderful guest for many years over on our show Thursday Night Tailgate, is former Pro Bowl kicker Eddie Murray. Let me remind you about what a great career Eddie had. He was a seventh-round draft pick by the Detroit Lions in 1980 out of Tulane. Played in the league from 1980 to 2000 for the Lions, Cowboys, Redskins, Chiefs, Vikings, Eagles, and Bucks. He was selected to the Pro Bowl in 1980 and 89. And to the 1980s all-decade team. For his career, he made 76% of his field goals, 99% of his extra points. He even punted five times for an average of 38 yards. Eddie still ranks 25th all-time in points scored, 24th in field goals made. He was inducted into more sports Hall of Fames than I think anyone ever. He was inducted into the Tulane Hall of Fame in 1987, the Greater Victoria Sports Hall of Fame in 2004, the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame in 2006, the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame in 2008, and the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame in 2014. And I am honored he is with me here this week on Next on the Tee. Hey, Eddie, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Chris. Hope you're doing well also.
Same here. So, Eddie, before we talk golf, I want to go back into your playing career for a minute because we just had the NFL draft this past weekend. And like yes. I mentioned in your intro, you were drafted in the seventh round. Not a lot of kickers get drafted. Talk about what you remember about the night that you got the call from the Lions.
Oh, wow. It seems so long ago now. It's funny just talking with guys how everything is so different. When I came out, I didn't get invited to play in any of the All-Star games, you know, the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine, all of those All-Star games that they used to have. Didn't get an invite, didn't go to the combine in Indianapolis. So when I came out, you know, I had a couple of workouts with some teams. Back then in the 80s, they used to have, it used to be called the Bledsoe Scout. Bledsoe was kind of like a scout would scout for like five or six teams. It was a money saving thing for the NFL. Now they have all huge staffs now, or back then, you know, some Bledsoe scouts would come and they would be scouting for five or six teams. So the draft wasn't on TV. It wasn't on radio. I mean, so it was really different than it is now. I know I was down at the Thursday in Detroit for the first draft, first round draft, and they just did an outstanding job. The Detroit Sports Commission putting it together. I think it was just a home run for the city of Detroit, and the Lions really put on a great job.
So talk about the scene there, because I read they had about 275,000 people for the NFL draft, set a record for attendance. Yeah. What was the scene like?
Well, I mean, I know TV-wise, it was just unbelievable to see. The thing that a lot of people don't realize, the 275,000 number that they gave out, they had like a cordon ring around Detroit. And that 275,000 were the people that were inside that ring, which basically was, you know, you could sign up on NFL.com and get a ticket and be inside the ring and you just find a spot to stand kind of thing. But I was actually at an event outside the cordoned off, and there were just thousands of parties and tailgates and people around there, because the word was that they thought there was about 450 to half a million people downtown on Thursday. So, but they only did the number inside the ring.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And anyway, Eddie, we're starting to see Barry Sanders showing up in a Lions jersey a lot more nowadays in commercials. He was there at the draft, and I know you spent a lot of time with Barry. It just, to me, it's refreshing to see him back. It didn't end all that well for Barry with the Detroit Lions and the franchise. Have things started to, you know, kind of ease up? It seems like he's okay now. Maybe time has healed the wounds.
Well, both himself and Calvin Johnson, because Calvin also had a similar type of situation with having to give some money back from signing bonuses with them not fulfilling their contract and all that type of stuff. And Calvin's definitely coming back more into the fold, as well as Barry Sanders. So I think bygones are bygones for both of those players. And the Lions have definitely embraced them to be around a lot more.
They certainly had a good season last year. 12-5 got themselves all the way to the NFC Championship game. It's good to see the Lions being a relevant team now. How do you feel about where the franchise is at and the direction they're headed?
Well, it definitely needed a boost in the arm. And I think when Mrs. Ford decided to step away rather than pass away to give the team onto her daughter, Sheila Ford Hemp, that was timing-wise was really good. Sheila came in, new ownership. Her first thing was, she fired the general manager, fired the head coach, brought in Brad Holmes, signed Dan Campbell. And that was the two biggest decisions she's made. And she looks like a genius right now because Brad Holmes has just done a phenomenal job with the draft picks these past few years. And everybody has really embraced the new culture that Dan Campbell has been preaching from day one. And last year really showed the benefits of what he was putting together there. And it was just an exciting season for alumni like myself, as well as the people of Detroit, Michigan, to support the Lions last year.
Let's talk a little golf, Eddie. And I was doing some research on you and read that you got introduced to the game by hitting balls in a field over in England with your buddies. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, but I got my first set of golf clubs when I was a senior at Tulane University. That was the first time. So everything else before that was, you know, you'd go to a driving range or your buddies had his dad's, you know, old clubs, and we would go play a little par three courses and stuff like that when I lived in England. But I got the bug basically when I was in college, like my junior and senior year. It kind of bit me. And from then on, it's been an addiction that, of course, you can't master. But it's funny, I've just had my first golf league tonight. And so I know I still got a lot more rust to knock off because I didn't I didn't play well or score well tonight. So I was a little frustrated.
You talk about getting your first set of clubs when you were in college. You and your wife were married in college, and I read she bought you that first set of clubs for Christmas, right?
You're exactly right. Yes. Yeah. That was my Christmas present my senior year. And yeah, that just kind of paved the way for me to get more addicted to golf.
People have been telling me for years that kickers are great golfers because the leg swing is kind of similar to a golf swing. You got to align yourself with your target line as a kicker and as a golfer. You got to deal with the elements like the wind and things of that nature as a kicker and as a golfer. Talk about how similar being an NFL kicker is to going out and playing around the golf.
Well, there's definitely a lot of parallels between golf and kicking as far as, you know, having a routine. You know, you have a, you know, certain routine to step back and take your field goals. The same thing, you have a routine with your swing, you know, how you set up, where you're aiming, and you try to repetitively do the same things over and over again and have good results. I was a lot better with a ball at my feet than a club in my hand. So that's been the challenge over these many years of playing golf.
Eddie, you've hosted the Hope Network Golf Classic for many years. Talk about what the Hope Network is.
I've been very fortunate to be involved with Hope Network for this is actually my 13th year with Hope Network. And I got involved with them. I originally was asked to sit on their foundation board, which was a group of philanthropic people in the state of Michigan that headed up their board. And so I sat on the board for like 6 years and, you know, was an ambassador for them, spoke about all the good things that we did around the states. You know, we're one of the largest nonprofits in Michigan. We're about a $180 million nonprofit, 3,000 employees, and provide mental health services in pretty much all 83 counties in Michigan. So we have a huge footprint. Actually, this year is our 60th year as a nonprofit. So we've been around a long time. And my last 7 years, I was actually offered a position by the CEO, Phil Weaver. He said, hey, how would you like to, you know, work for Hope Network instead of just sitting on the board and start paying you for what you've been doing for free? So it was a pretty easy yes, because I was pretty involved with what they were doing and all the good things that we did. And I started having a golf outing actually this year in June is going to be my 10th anniversary for the golf outing. So it's been a lot of fun and very gratifying to help out Hope Network.
The tournament is actually coming up here pretty soon, Monday, June 17th at the Oakland University Golf Course there in Rochester, Michigan. Yes. Talk about the event itself and how people can get registered to go play.
Well, if anyone's interested in signing up for a foursome, they could go to hopenetwork.org. and go to Hope Network Golf Classic, and that will pull up their sign-up sheets at that time. And yeah, we doing pretty good. I've been very fortunate. All of my sponsorship levels that I've had have all been taken up, which is really good. So now I'm just trying to fill out the field for the golf outing. There's two golf courses there. There's Khaki Cousins, which is the original golf course at Oakland University. And then the RF Sharp course is the newer course that Rick Smith designed for us about 15 years ago, I think now is when he first designed the new course for us. So it's a great facility, great clubhouse. We have a great driving range, short game. And yeah, like if anyone is interested in coming out and playing for us, go to hopenetwork.org.
Eddie, I know annually in the American Century Celebrity Tournament, guys like Al Del Greco was a peer of yours. He's a guy that went out there and won that tournament a bunch. Dan Quinn, who is a great friend of this show, he's been a winner out there several times. Other great players like Dick Anderson and Joe Theismann, Steve Barkowski, another wonderful friend of the show. Really good players that played in that tournament. Who were some of your favorite players to play alongside of, and what are some of your memories from being a part of that tournament?
Oh, that was really good. I know that was in the early stages of the Celebrity Players Tour that was being developed and grown at that time. Unfortunately, the Celebrity Players Tour has folded, and the one thing that has come out from it that has been a constant is the Century Lake Tahoe event. That's the one event that they've kept, and NBC kept it because it was their big celebrity golf outing that they would have. They would have a lot of NBC TV people that would play in it now. And so a lot of the sports guys are not part of that because of the Celebrity Players Tour folding up. But I had some great time. I know my wife and I, we used to love it because we just kind of used it as a three-day vacation, because back then the tour said, hey, you have to fly yourself there. And once you get there, then we'll take care of everything else. We'll put you up, we'll feed you and all that stuff. So it was like a mini vacation, and got to play some beautiful courses. And of course, the Lake Tahoe event was always the marquee event for us each year. Got to meet and play with some great people, played with Bonnie Blair, the speed skater, David Robinson, actually played with, God, all of a sudden I've got his name, Mr. Cubs.
Ernie Banks.
I'm sorry. I got to play with Ernie Banks and David Robinson in a threesome, and that was pretty interesting. I just sat there like a sponge listening to all the story that Ernie Banks was talking about, the old Negro Leagues back in the day and playing for the Cubs. He had some phenomenal stories.
David Robinson intrigues me. A guy that size, I mean, I can't imagine what that golf swing was like. What was your impression of watching him play?
Well, the thing that was intriguing, so, you know, if you can think of, you know, you put your bag on the back of the cart, right? Put your bags in there. And so, you know, your putter and your wedges are like at the top of the bag. And then, you know, your irons will be a little bit higher. And then your driver is like, you know, 6 or 8 inches above. Well, David's wedge was like a foot above. And then his driver was like 18 inches above. It's like over the roof of the cart. That was the thing that was so unusual, because he was so tall, and he had to have longer shafts, as well as he had these grips that looked like noodles, you know, like pool noodles. You know, there were big, these big, huge foam things. And I'm going, oh my God, look at this thing. I mean, it's like a pipe. It's not like a handle on this thing. So that was the unusual thing with David. But I mean, he loved to play. He had a huge swing. Again, it was just very difficult for him to try to time everything up because he was so tall. But I know he got the bug and he loved to play.
What are some of the other fun tournaments or events that you got to be a part of over the years?
Well, again, the Celebrity Players Tour, I got to play at Barton Creek, played at a tournament in Dallas at Las Colinas. Emmett Smith and Troy Aikman had a Celebrity Tour event there. Played at Boyne Highlands up in Michigan. That was a close one for me to go and play in. Of course, the Tahoe event out in for the Century was a lot of fun also. But it's a shame it had to fold up. But it was a lot of fun while it lasted.
The people that you got an opportunity to play with, did somebody really knock your socks off and really surprise you about how well they played the game?
Actually, I felt Bonnie Blair was a really good player. She actually had her husband, I forget his name. I know he was a speed skater also for the USA team. And he caddied for her. And I played with Steve Berline and Bonnie Blair and myself at the Tahoe event. And she had only been playing for like a couple of years, I believe, at the time. And she played very well for not really playing for a long time. And again, it was just because she was so busy with training and doing everything that she was doing, preparing for the Winter Olympics and her speed skating schedule that she had. She didn't really have time to play golf. She always wanted to take it up, and she picked it up fairly well.
What are some of the courses that you had an opportunity to play that you really enjoyed?
Oh, well, my thing was when I played for the Philadelphia Eagles, I got a chance to play. So the center of the team at the time was a guy named Dave Alexander. And he had been there, I think, about 3 years beforehand. And he was a good friend of Howdy Giles, who was Arnold Palmer's dentist.
Wow.
And we got to play Pine Valley.
Oh, you got it.
And that was quite the experience.
I bet it was. What do you remember about Pine Valley? That's a course that we're all dying to play.
Well, the thing that was interesting with that course was basically the four caddies, because they all had different signals and stuff like that, and to let you know where the ball was. And it was always intriguing what they were saying. So they would always have someone back at the tee, and then they would have the four caddies that were looking where the ball was. And I would say, well, what is that signal? And he goes, you're in deep shit, basically, is what he's saying, you know, excuse my language, you know? So yeah, pretty funny. Yeah.
So Eddie, are there other courses that are on your bucket list that you're dying to play still?
Oh, you know, I've been fortunate. I've traveled to Scotland and played a lot of the name courses over there. The, you know, the Carnoustie's and the Troons and the Turnberries and stuff like that. You know, a lot of the California courses and Palm Springs and stuff like that too. So I've been very fortunate with my golf travel, you know, down to, you know, Florida and stuff like that. So, and my in-laws live out in Scottsdale, so I got to play the TPCs and the Troons and the Greyhawks of the world and the Desert Mountains, all the courses out at Desert Mountain. And I've been very blessed to have the opportunity to play around the world and around the country.
Eddie, before I let you go, remind our listeners again, how can we get involved with the Hope Network, support what those folks are doing, and then for those that want to get out there and play in the Golf Classic, how can they do it?
They can go to hopenetwork.org and go to events, or go to Hope Network Golf Classic, and that will take them to the sponsorship form.
And how can we follow you on social media? Are you out there?
I'm on Instagram and I'm on LinkedIn. That's as far as I go.
How can we find you on Instagram?
I'm under Eddie Murray 3.
Eddie Murray 3. Got it.
Yes, sir.
Well, Eddie, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and be a part of this show. You've been a wonderful guest for many years over on the football show. Always enjoy getting to spend time with you. It's a huge privilege. I hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you again, maybe a little bit later on this summer, see how the game's going.
I would love to, Chris. Thank you for having me on your show tonight.
Eddie, take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Take care, sir.
See you, Eddie.
Bye.
Folks, that is the great Eddie Murray. Again, on Instagram, at EddieMurray3. HopeNetwork.org is the website to go out there and take a look at what those folks are doing and the wonderful impact that they're having. And Hope Network Golf Classic is where you can go and be a part of it. They've got a lot of really great players that go out there and play in that event. Looks like a lot of fun that they have. I've seen some pictures posted for years out on Eddie's Facebook page and other places. Go out there and check it out. And if you're a Detroit or a Michigan sports fan, this is going to be a haven for you. So many legends that have played for the Lions and the Tigers and have gone to the University of Michigan and you know, the Red Wings, everything that is Sports Michigan, they've got celebrities out there that are a part of this event. You're going to want to be a part of it as well. Again, hopenetwork.org is where you can go do it. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this complete edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again to Bob Ford, Greg Sabella, Brian Jacobs, Chandler Withington, and Eddie Murray for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are, of course, Tom Patrick will be here as he is every other week. Dr. Bob Winters will make his regular monthly appearance. Former four-time winner out on the PGA Tour and Champions Tour, and a guy who many inside the game think would make a great PGA Tour commissioner, Joe Inman, will make his Next on the Tee debut. And then we'll round things out with our good friend and the CEO of TaylorMade Golf, David Abeles. So, folks, we're going to have a lot of fun next week. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Quick reminder that you can find this show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. But in particular, we're out there on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review site. So just go to triblive.com and click on sports, and you're going to find the most recent episode right there on the homepage of the sports section. You can also click on sports and then podcasts, and you're going to find all of the shows from this season available to you. The Next on the Tee logo is going to be there for you front and center. Just click on that, and you're going to find everything from this season. You can also find the show out on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audio Boom, and Player.fm. And as I say every week, my sincere thanks to the folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But most of all, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week. Hit 'em straight, my friends.